Okay, my full name is Eloisa Hernandez Janeiro.
And what do you remember the most about the literacy campaign, your time in the literacy campaign?
The sense of freedom, the sense of liberty, the sense of feeling very great. I felt like a Goliath, because you must go back to my age. I was a child, and this was the possibility I had to go away and to be with other people and do what I wanted to do.
How was it that you got involved? What inspired you to get involved, to go teach on the literacy campaign?
Analyzing things at that point in time, my parents, my dad and my mom, were my inspiration, because at that time you didn't know what the revolution was. You didn't realize, because you were a child. So you just went away and did what you had to do. That was it.
How old were you at the time?
Well, I'm very bad at dates. I was born on May the 9th, 1948, and the campaign began in 1961. But the revolution triumphs in 1959. So I was 11 when the revolution triumphed. I was about 12 when the campaign started.
And when you say that your parents were your inspiration, how did they inspire you? What did they say to you?
My parents didn't have to say anything, because both of my parents, please remember that I was born in Caimanera. Many people call it Guantanamo. You know, I don't have to explain to you what Guantanamo means to us and to the world, that where the naval base is. The U.S. naval base is based in Guantanamo, but in a small territory known as Caimanera. It's a beautiful territory where the war had been really waged there, a battle with weapons, with fire, with everything. And my parents, they both were engaged in that battle, in the organization of the liberation of that little town known as Caimanera, being so near to the naval base where the Americans were based in that period. And they would come from the naval base to the place where I used to live, where I learned my English with them, right? Because not all the Americans are bad Americans. There are lots and millions of, I don't know, hundreds of millions of good Americans, okay? And it seems to be that according to my life, it had to be that way. I had to be always connected to the English language and to the American people, which I really love. So going back to the literacy campaign, my parents didn't have to force me to go or ask me to go. I went because I was also with my parents when they were in the war against the tyranny, you understand? I was a child, but I would carry weapons. I would help my parents. We were very small, and my sister and myself would carry weapons to a given place so that the weapons would be taken to the rebels in the second front in Santiago de Cuba, you understand? So that is the reason why I was part of the literacy campaign, as something natural, as life is, because life is very natural. You have to let go life and be part and parcel of what you really enjoy. What do I remember the most? The sense of liberty, the sense of freedom. And I don't know, Martí said something like schools or teaching is like enhancing or promoting the spiritual level of the human beings. So this is what I remember the most of the literacy campaign.
Do you have memories of your students, people who you gave the classes to?
I have a very I've had a busy life. So you don't remember things because you think that someday you're going to be interviewed or whatever, right? So you do things, but I do remember the school. It was in the open. And I remember standing in front of the pupils. I do remember that feeling of feeling important, or being a big girl, not an adolescent, not a child, not having my parents tell me do this, do that. I think that the greatest thing that the literacy campaign had was the sense of freedom and spiritual enjoyment that all, meaning the teachers, the methodologists, and the pupils, and the so-called ignorant or illiterate had, because nobody is illiterate. Everybody has things inside, and what you do is you teach them to read and write. And then you provide that person with a sense of freedom that allows the person to read John Paul's encyclicals, to read the Bible, to read Fidel, to read Martin Luther King, to learn about Abraham Lincoln, to learn about Michael Moore or whatever. You understand? To know a little bit about Savannah, Georgia, to know a little bit about Gandhi, Mother Teresa, whatever. And I think that every person, every individual is a teacher. Because do you have children? Not yet. But when you bring a child, when you have a son, you're not a teacher. And you teach your son or your daughter to be an honorable man, right? You don't need to read and write to do that. The people in the Amazonas don't need to read and write to teach their kids. They're Indians, or the black people in the United States of America, they're black, they're Indian, whatever they are. And you teach your children to be honorable people.
So how was that process for you becoming a teacher?
Well, I felt a bit nervous. I thought I couldn't cope with that. It was a very big thing. I've always been a shy person, but I had to do it and I had to teach them. I still preserve the list of the names of my pupils, their attendance to class. I have it in my book. It was a great experience.
And you said something very beautiful just a moment ago about the wisdom of the people, of the sort of so-called illiterates.
Yes.
What do you feel like you learned from them?
What do you learn from the people?
Did you
Their humbleness. Because there were people who were old in my group, grandparents, women, because you know that Caimanera, and then Guantanamo. It has been known only because of the prostitutes before the revolution. But there were not only prostitutes, the women who were prostitutes had to be prostitutes then, you understand? And they went to class and they were free enough to go and learn. They were humble enough to sit and learn from a person who was a kid. And that is what you learn. I think that is the grandeur of a process that has nothing to do with politics, that has nothing to do with a given establishment or a given process, meaning socialist or capitalist, but rather that rapport that you establish between persons that teaches the person to be he for himself or she for herself. That's the greatest thing. I think that is the greatest battle without weapons. A peaceful war, if you want to call it war. A peaceful endeavor, right? And it comes from the old ages. It has been practiced even by the church. Because you see today North Americans and people from all over the world in Venezuela and people that you have never even interviewed that are unknown to the world and has done much than what I did. You understand?
What memories do you have? Were you there during the time of the literacy campaign? There was an invasion, all this conflict between the U.S. and Cuba sort of came to a head. What memories do you have of that?
Well, I do remember that I was in shock, in panic, when the invasion took place. I heard it, I remember the television. My dad had a television at home, and I remember the news that we had been invaded. But with what shocked me the most, what that the news is, I remember, I was coming from my, I now remember, coming from my aunt's house in El Nunque, in Caimanera, a little place, because the center was the part where the harbor was, where people would take the boats and go to the Navy, and to the naval base to work. But you had to turn left and go to my aunt's house. And I remember coming from my aunt's house, and there was a church, and I heard the news, everybody had the radios, that the invasion had been crushed, the Bay of Pigs invasion. And I went inside the church. I have never been inside that church. I just jumped in the church, I sat down, and I said, finally the invasion is over. I was very much afraid of the invasion, but I was very, very much at ease when I realized that the invasion had been gone. It was over. For me, the bombs and the killings were over. That's what I remember the most.
Talk a little more about Caimanera, please. Explain, what is Caimanera? What was Caimanera?
Well, Caimanera is a small, very small town. I think that it's about 40 minutes away from Guantanamo by car. I lived in Caimanera, a very much underdeveloped place then. In 1958, the only thing that existed there was the production of salt, but not as mechanized as they are doing it now. The territory was divided into two, the little town. There was a place we could not, the good girls could not visit because it was the prostitutes. And then the center and the other half of the town was dedicated to the rest of the people in Caimanera. But I told you a while ago not to remember Caimanera only for the prostitutes. We must remember Caimanera for all the good people living there, for all that they did for the revolution, for their dedication to work there, to stay there. And after 1959, and after half years have gone by, all the efforts, because they are in the, how do you say, in the first line against that naval base, that piece of territory that has been illegally occupied in our country, as many others in other parts of the world, because of the, how do you say, the feeling of power of a big empire. I do this because I want to do this. I want to have the base there, and I don't mind what the people think about that. So Caimanera was and still is a nice place where people live and people keep on. And they sometimes they pretend that it's not there, but if something happens that awakens their feelings, they do wake up and they do act and react against any action that can be taken against our territory because of the naval base.
And how did you come to speak such beautiful English?
Well, maybe it's 10 generations behind. I don't know. But to be honest, my mom,
how do you speak such beautiful English?
I told you before that maybe it's because 10 generations behind me. My mother, she studied in a Catholic school in Camagüey, and in a nun school, she knew English. But it was meant to be that way. Things don't happen by chance in life. I am a person who thinks that when you are born, you carry a book under your arm and the book has number of pages, and your life is all written in that book. This is my belief. Of course, there are things that you have to change in the course of your life. You have to be dialectic. You cannot be dogmatic, right? But this is my feeling. Since I was born in Caimaneira, there were North Americans who were in the Navy, who were working in the naval base, who would come from the base to Caimaneira and stay with their wives and live for the weekends with their wives. Or maybe in the course of the day, they would come in the day and then they would go the next day to work in the naval base. And this is how I learned my English when I was 3 or 4 years old, because I would live with them. I remember eating peanut butter. I remember the bouquet or the flavor of marshmallows. I remember the peanut butter with strawberry jelly or jam, however you call it. I remember, when you used to dye the eggs and put them in colors and put them in the basket. I don't know when did they do this, but I used to be with a friend, with an American woman who lived there with her husband. Her name was Pat. She had blue eyes like you, and she had the car like you, just like you. Just, you're a second Pat to me today. I remember all that. So I learned the English from the cradle. Then I worked to Guantanamo, and I studied English in a Protestant school in Sarah Asher School. My fifth and my sixth grade. And in the sixth grade, the revolution nationalized education. So I had Spanish in the morning and English in the afternoon. And I enjoy speaking in English because I don't think in Spanish, I think always in English. This is how, then I went to scholarship, then I graduated, and I became an interpreter because I wanted to be an interpreter. And that's what I do.
So you've been a communicator through your whole life, really?
Yes, I have communicated the ideas of others. It's easier, because when you have to communicate your ideas, you feel a bit shy.
What importance did your experiences in the literacy campaign have for you throughout your life? What have you carried with you from that time?
There is a term now used as solidarity, right? I didn't know that term when I was 11, 12, and that term didn't exist in Cuba. Solidarity came after the term, right? The term that we know is help, right? Not solidarity then. So it's to help others. It's nice to help other people. And that is what I carry, to help other persons and myself too. This I've realized after, right? When you stand here and you look at the literacy campaign, like you call in films a flashback, right? In the film industry, this is a flashback. If we have a flashback, what I remember is I told you before, it's a sense of freedom, it's a sense of liberty. It's a sense, you call it today independence. It's a sense of what we call today solidarity. I don't know how you call it in the church, right?
Did you stay in touch with any of your students?
No, because my life has been as fast and moving as a revolution. So I lived in one Caimaneira, then I went to Guantanamo, then from Guantanamo I moved to a place here in the old Hershey sugar mill, now the Camilo Cienfuegos, where I did my secondary school. And from them I went to Havana, to Miramar, to be a scholarship student and live in those big nice houses as a scholarship student from 1964 to 1968, where I studied English. So then I didn't graduate, and then I went abroad, and then I translated, and then I met Stokely Carmichael, and I met this and that. So my life has been like that. I haven't been able to preserve my contact with many people.
Where did you actually teach the classes? Where did you go to?
I went to Caimaneira in the same town. part of the time there, and then in another town in Guantanamo, where my parents had to move because my father was working in the agrarian reform. So he had to leave. We had to leave our house and go to like a hut with two bedrooms. When it rained, the house was completely flooded, and we lived there, and there we finished the campaign. I remember I taught a man, I had to ask my father because I had forgotten. His name is or was Emilio, a black 50-year-old man. This is where I finished the campaign, together with other persons who went there.
Did you come
back? Older than me. Maybe taller, not, maybe not so old.
Do you have stories or memories, anecdotes, specific memories from your time teaching?
I remember once when we were trying to have a person read one of the lessons in this booklet that we were given. Because I didn't go to Baradero. You know that the persons who went to the campaign went to Baradero and had a stash there, and I didn't have a training. I just got the booklets and I went to teach. It was like that. So I remember. I remember that I had troubles in teaching the person with the vocal O. It was very difficult for that person to really grasp the meaning of that word. And then one of the pupils themselves, one of the youngest in the group, stood up, and all of a sudden she stood up and she fell on the floor and she started, oh, 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 because she, pretending that she had a pain. So the sound was what really made the person realize that we were talking about that letter. Other memories. I just remember the whole thing, the whole town, the whole people, a global vision. I was very, very young. I'm 58 today, but I was very, very young. I told you, you don't keep memories for the future. You just keep on living. You understand?
Did you come to Havana to the big march at the end?
No. No, and it was in the anniversary. I have to go back to the medal. When I received the medal here in Havana, when I was a worker as an interpreter in my workplace, I received the medal. But you don't work for medals. Those of us who went to the campaign, that's the best thing. That you don't work to get being recognized. You understand? Just like the priests, just like the religious people, just like many people in the world. I remember very much Mother Teresa. I read some of her works. And Mother Teresa, or many people in the world, they do things because you have to do them. You feel pleasure when you help another person. And that is like when you get gasoline. It's your insulin, it's your gasoline. And that is why I believe, I want to ask you to let me go out a little bit of this illiteracy thing and the literacy campaign. People don't understand the Cubans. And why we Cubans have resisted so many years of what they call, the establishment calls embargo, and we, in using the proper language, call it blockade. Why have we resisted so many years? Because we like to help other people. And other people like to help us too. That has existed before the money existed. Now they call it barter trade. It's no barter, there's no trade. It's just a linkage of people, you understand?
Is there anything else you'd like to add that maybe I didn't ask you?
No.
Thank you so much, Eloise. It's very beautiful.
Yeah.
Just stay there.
Yeah, no, siga.
¿Y estos son?
mis padres, mi papá y mi mamá. Mi papá aún vive. Tiene 86 años. Ellos son combatientes. Yo tengo ahí otras fotos de mi papá con sus medallas.
¿Dónde está él ahora? ¿Dónde vive él?
En Artemisa, con mi hermana. Y este es el libro, ¿ves? Que lo debe ver cómo está, porque... Esta es la lista de mis alumnos. No le he quitado la presilla porque tengo miedo que se me vaya a romper. Pero más que la medalla, lo que más amor le tengo es al libro. ¿Ves? Cuando faltaban, cuando estaban enfermos. Aquí está, ¿no ves? En el mes de septiembre, el mes de octubre, y la asistencia, como se hacía antes. El otro libro no lo tengo. El otro libro no lo tengo, pero bueno, conservo este texto.
¿Cómo se llamaban los alumnos? ¿Cuáles son los nombres que tienen el papelito?
Ay, los alumnos. Bueno, pues mira, Nereida, Julia, Edelfina. Entonces abajo dice, analfabeto, asistencia, para yo acordarme, ¿no? Analfabeto, falta. La Cruz Roja, the Red Cross, would mean that the student didn't come to class. And the black would mean that he attended school that day. This is July, August, September, October, November and December. Todos los meses. Y aquí el ratón que se encargó de.
Was this a system that they taught you, or you
no,
made it
no,
up yourself?
No. Remember, I didn't receive the training. No. Mira, open it the book by chance. Right? Just where I found today. Every class, every subject, every topic would have a thinking of Fidel and then the class. The subject matter is 23 and it's entitled, The Revolution Wins All Battles. Now what is it that heads this class today? Anna, it's a quotation. It says, we shall be winning the battles one by one. Our main slogan is, venceremos. This is what Fidel said once. The Cuban Revolution has had to wage many battles along the course of its final and definitive consolidation. In all of them, it has been able to win because of the courage, staunchness, and firmness of our people, and to the help offered and rendered by many peoples and friendly governments to us. You see? I opened the book by chance, and it only reiterates what I just told you in the course of the interview. So, these are my parents in that period. My mom and my dad. And you know where they are? They are sitting at Pat Sharp's house, the North American woman that taught me to dye the eggs. Easter. And this is la medalla. It's nice to have a medal. But honestly, the medal is nice because I no longer preserve the emblem in the medal, that light. El farol, I don't have it. It was the emblem of the literacy campaign. Was the emblem of the medal, El Farol, the light. It's the emblem, it gives light. This is what I preserve. My memories, like Barbara Streisand sings, memories.
octubre 5 de 1961, año de la educación. Querida hija, ante nada mis mayores deseos que te encuentres bien en unión de tus compañeras y amigos. Por esta todos bien. Yo estoy mejorando, pues el plan que tengo me ha estado bien. Ya camino sin bastón, aunque aún me duele un poco la pierna cuando camino mucho o estoy parada. Recibí tu carta y por ella veo lo que me dices, pues la mayoría de las cosas son bobas, que los contras quieren precisamente que cojan miedo. Ahora están revueltos y como no los dejan moverse, quieren sembrar el miedo. Lo del campamento de milicia en Cuatro Esquinas es para precaución, pues tú sabes que por ahí no se veía un miliciano ni un rebelde. Hay que cuidar aquellos contornos. Así que no te preocupes y deja todo a un lado. Cumple con el compromiso que te ha impuesto la patria hasta el fin. El día de mañana no te arrepentirás porque tendrás el orgullo de haber ayudado a reconstruir la patria. Esto hoy parece que no tiene importancia, pero eso ya cuenta en la historia. No temas que de los cobardes no se ha escrito nada y tú no eres hija de cobarde. ¿Para qué tienes un cuchillo en la cintura? Y si fuera necesario coger un rifle, también lo haría, pues a la hora de pelear y defender lo que es de uno, se pierde el miedo. Así es que patria o muerte, venceremos. Es preferible morir todos antes que volver al pasado, pues si antes torturaban y mataban, ahora ya puedes imaginar lo que harían. Por eso hay que pelear cuando llegue el momento, hasta con los dientes si fuera necesario. ¿Tú crees que si tu padre y yo te viéramos en peligro, no acudiríamos en tu ayuda? No creas en cuento, que eso de los alzados es mentira. Aquí no hay quien se mueva. Y si algún idiota se atreve, se espera el paredón. Así que no, quítate eso de la cabeza y no te preocupes. La gallega con otras compañeras le mandan cosas a ella. La abuela está mejor, pero es muy viejita y lo que le dio fue un infarto cardíaco. Así es que en cualquier momento le da otro y ya no existirá. Ella dice que va para esa si sigue bien el lunes, pues ella es la que se turna con la mamá en el hospital. Le dice a Tina que le estoy haciendo algunas cositas para el bebé. También le llevaremos un regalito a Fefa por el día de su santo. Pues no te pude mandar el dinero del cake porque tu padre no había cobrado y la cosa estaba corta de plata. Aquí te mando ese par de pesos para que te remiendes, pues no sé si podremos ir el domingo. La máquina de Guillermo se rompió y no encontramos los repuestos. Mejor es que tú no vengas, pues después es más pesado irse. Y dos o tres días no vale la pena. Así es que no te vuelvas loca y ten calma que todo llega a su tiempo. Allí va carta de Blanca también, ya Manuel vino de la isla. También el papá de ella está aquí. Por aquí todo sigue igual. No creas que hay nada distinto. Cuando vengas ya la casa estará pintada y arreglada. Bueno, dale cariños a todos los de esa, que pronto iré a darles otro poco de lata a todos. Y tú, dime si quieres que te lleve algunas pastillas. Fe y adelante, que la victoria es nuestra. Abrazos y besos de tus padres y hermanas, que no te olvidan, patria o muerte, Antonio. Aquí también está el telegrama que mandaron cuando estaba, el que viene siendo el pase en Caguama C4. Este no es este. Míralo aquí. Yo guardo muchas cartas. Esto es historia, como dice. Con su número y todo. Este fue el campamento que estuvimos ahí. En Varadero. Caguama C4. Y a su vez era el pase.
Completo, si quiere.
Bueno, dice República de Cuba, Ministerio de Comunicaciones, telégrafo del Estado, telegrama. Señora Antonia del Pino, calle 36, 2711, La Sierra, Marianao, La Habana. Su hija Josefina se encuentra instalada en la zona Caguama, albergue C4 de este campamento. Este telegrama le sirve de pase para visitarlo. Mario Díaz Hernández, coordinador, Comisión Nacional de Alfabetización, Fidel Castro Ruz, ministro interino de Educación.